Hope everyone is doing well. We'll begin our Bible class that we're going to do on Samson. As you can see from the Bible story from the History Channel, and actually that was a really good version of the Bible story beginning from the beginning all the way until, I think it ended somewhere around Acts, but that's Samson. And that's the version of Samson that was used. So, a lot of material to cover. Got two chapters, chapter 15 and 16. And so we'll begin with a prayer, and then we'll continue from there. Father, thank you so much for this morning. Thank you so much, God, for your love and your compassion. Thank you so much, God, for taking care of us and all the ways you take care of us. Father, I definitely pray so much for those situation in Orlando with the shooting, God. And Father, it happens so often within our society. I pray so much, God, that you will be with the families, that you will comfort them. I pray so much for those that were injured, that they will heal, they will be well. Father, just remind us over and over again about how much we need you. How much, God, this world does not have anything to offer us, God. It doesn't have anything for us to offer that's good. Only everything that comes from you is good, God. And I pray so much you remember that. I pray so much that during this time in this story, that it will be a reminder of that, that God, all things come from you. Thank you so much once again for all you give to us. And I pray in Jesus' name, amen. Well, I want to begin as far as with a brief summary of chapters 13 and 14, because I think it will help to remind us of everything that will occur moving forward and into this, to what we talk about in chapters 15 and 16 of Judges. To remember that the Israelites were delivered into the hands of the Philistines for 40 years. However, they did not cry out to the Lord for help. A lot of it had to do with their worshiping of gods and their perspective and how they felt about, you know, the Philistines and about how they worshiped. But then Manoah and his wife were told by an angel of the Lord they would have Samson. And that Samson would be a Nazarite. Remember the things about a Nazarite is that a Nazarite would abstain from grape products, including wine, eat non-kosher foods, no razor on his head, and no contact with dead bodies. Time Samson was born, that Samson was equipped to be a judge by God, and he was infused with enormous talent and enormous strength by God. Samson, however, lacked convictions. And we'll see that through the advisement of his, against the advisement of his parents and against God's law, that he saw a Philistine woman, that he wanted to marry her just by sight. Not ever talking to her, not ever spending time with her, just by sight that he wanted to marry a Philistine woman. And against complete advisement, that's what he wanted to do. But while traveling to see the woman, the Samson killed the lion with his bare hands after the lion confronted him. Sometime later, once again against the laws of being a Nazarite, he scooped honey out of the lion's carcass and ate it. Not supposed to be in contact with dead bodies. But nonetheless, he saw the honey, ended up doing it, and not only just ate it himself, but also gave it to his parents, which still was against what he was doing for the Nazarite. But also at the wedding that he challenged 30 of his companions through a riddle, and because they couldn't answer the riddle, the companions threatened to kill his wife and her family by burning them if she did not get the answer from Samson. She got the answer from Samson. The Samson felt betrayed, so then he went and found and went to Ashkelon and killed 30 innocent men, took their clothes, and gave it to the companions. He then left his wife, and because of the embarrassment, the father then gave her to the best man. And so those are the things that went on in 15 and 16, which now brings us to Judges chapter 15. And in verse 1. So, in Judges 15 and verse 1, it says, later on, at the time of wheat harvest, Samson took a young goat and went to visit his wife. He said, I'm going to my wife's room. But her father would not let him go in. I was so sure you hated her, he said, that I gave her to your companion. Isn't her younger sister more attractive? Take her instead. Samson said to them, this time I have a right to get even with the Philistines. I will really harm them. So the family into which Samson had married had suffered a shocking disgrace in the eyes of the whole city when Samson had rushed away without consummating the marriage. That obviously that some time had passed before Samson paid a visit. That's why I talked about later on at the time of wheat harvest. Samson's visit is an indication of the kind of marriage that was contracted. The technical name is Sagada marriage. It was like that of Gideon and his concubine, in which the wife continued to live in her father's house while with the husband paying occasional visits. That's not the way to have a marriage. That's not the way a marriage is supposed to function. One being one, one household, and that's it. If you're in a situation that the wife has to live separately than you, you got issues from the very beginning. That's not a good marriage to be involved in at all. And that tells you a sign that things are not right at all. But even Samson bringing a young goat also seems to be the customary price of these type of visits. So as he would have this type of visit, he should bring an animal. So in this case, would be a young goat. They said that was customary for their time. But the dad insisted that he instead offered his younger daughter to Samson. And if we learn from the previous chapters, no one helps Samson get a wife. No one does that. Samson doesn't take well to that. You don't get a wife for Samson. Samson chooses his own wife. For Samson, even God won't choose his wife. That's the way Samson thinks. That's the way Samson's mindset is. Samson gets his own wife. And so Samson decides to take revenge on the Philistines because of this. So we see in verse 4, where it says, so he went out and caught 300 foxes and tied them tail to tail in pairs. Then he fastened a torch to every pair of tails, lit the torches, and let the foxes loose in the standing grain of the Philistines. He burned up the shocks and standing grain together with the vineyards and olive groves. When the Philistines asked, who did this? They were told, Samson, the Timnite's son-in-law, because his wife was given to his companion. So the Philistines went up and burned her and her father to death. Samson said to them, since you acted like this, I swear that I won't stop until I get my revenge on you. He attacked them viciously and slaughtered many of them. Then he went down and stayed in a cave in the rock of Edom. The commentary that I was reading, you know, had arguments as far as with scholars about Samson's ability to be able to catch 300 foxes because of how elusive they are and just how they don't travel in packs and how challenging that was. I don't care about that. The Bible says it, said it was so. So therefore, I believe it. Not only that, but Samson was infused with great strength. What would stop God then from making sure he could get those foxes if it was God's will? Also, we know that God wanted to punish the Philistines, and so God will make sure it gets done. I believe if God wanted to raise a rock to go and to take revenge on the Philistines, God could have done so. That's it. So that's what God did with Samson, had gotten the 300 foxes and had set them loose in the grain fields. Now, the wheat fields of that section of Palestine extended continuously for 30 miles. And the fire that ensued was similar to those devastating fires seen occasionally in California, where we heard that it would just start with one tree being on fire, and then it just keeps spreading and spreading and spreading, and end up doing a bunch of damage to houses, to buildings, to nature, that it just spreads. That was what's going on here. But we'll see later that there's a connection about this, that this was no accident that this was done, that Samson was prompted to do this, to go burn their wheat fields. It was not by accident. And we're going to find out later how this is all connected, why this was done, and you're going to see how this was God's will that this was done. But the sad irony, if you remember from the previous chapters, the big thing that Samson's wife was trying to do, that's why she even went and tricked Samson into giving up the riddle, was that she did not want her family to be harmed. And it threatened to kill her, and it threatened to kill her family. The tragic irony in all of this is that when it was all said and done, her father and she ended up being burnt, being killed by the Philistines. So it still ended up coming back on her. And it still ended up in being affected where she ended up getting burned to death along with her father. And so Samson decided to use this as a time to get revenge and slaughter many of the Philistines. And he did. He ended up destroying them. And I always question this, how much did Samson really care about the father and about the wife? Because he left the wife immediately. The father, he definitely had an issue with the father because the father decided to go and have the wife get married to the best man. So how much he really cared about them? It was an opportunity for him to get revenge. And I said, whether for noble or ignoble purposes, that God's will ends up working out, and so God used him to get revenge on the Philistines. But then he ended up staying in a cave in the rock of Edom. And you can see where Edom is. So, yeah, he went a little distance and went and hid away and to make sure that no one could go and get him. So then we see in verse 9, read the 9 through 13, where the Philistines went up and camped in Judah, spreading out near Lehi. The people of Judah asked, "Why have you come to fight us?" "We have come to take Samson prisoner," they answered, "to do to him as he did to us." Then 3,000 men from Judah went down to the cave in the rock of Edom and said to Samson, "Don't you realize that the Philistines are rulers over us? What have you done to us?" He answered, "I merely did to them what they did to me." They said to him, "We've come to tie you up and hand you over to the Philistines." Samson said, "Swear to me that you won't kill me yourselves." "Agreed," they answered. "We will only tie you up and hand you over to them. We will not kill you." So they bound him with two new ropes and led him up from the rock. So you can see the Philistines were determined that they were going to get Samson. So they determined to send 1,000 men to Lehi to get him. Samson was a loner. You never see in the scriptures where Samson had a companion. You know, you think about David and his mighty men. You think about the ones that end up having judges or kings. They always had their men, even their soldiers around them. It seems that Samson was always alone. So 1,000 Philistines went to go get Samson. You can see the indication of the fear they had of Samson. Story spread. Social media got around about how Samson went and just killed a bunch of men all by himself. So they said, "We're going to send 1,000 because we don't trust him." Not at all. They were willing to declare war on Judah if they insisted on protecting Samson. So they let them know, either you give Samson over to us or we will declare war on you. And you will have to die through the result of trying to fight against Samson. But you can see where even the fear of Judah has come along. Because it seems like still Judah outnumbered them. But they weren't going to risk it over Samson. Not at all. So the part you have to understand, the men of Judah exaggerate the Philistines' control. Because they're talking about the Philistines ruling over them. The Philistines never ruled over all Judah. But they had an iron monopoly. And they were a real threat to that part of Judah, which lay in the lowlands west of Jerusalem. But you know, this is a sad day for Judah, because Judah was willing to turn on their own versus fighting against the Philistines and rallying to Samson's defense. The point is that that Judah was so egocentric and so lacking in fidelity that they would do whatever was necessary to benefit themselves. If it benefited Judah, they were willing to do it. If it wasn't going to benefit them, then whatever. Looked at Samson, the Samson looked like a benefit to them, and so therefore they were willing to turn him over. But it's interesting, and I don't know if whether Samson thought that God wouldn't be with him if he fought against Judah. He knew that God would be with him if he fought against the Philistines, but Judah not sure. And so he asked them, "Just don't kill me. Turn me over, but just don't kill me." So I thought that was interesting that he asked for that when Samson would go against just a huge army and would have no problems killing them. But against his own, against Judah, he had that request. So I always thought that was interesting that he asked about that. But then in verse 14, it goes 14 through 20, It says, as he approached Lehi, the Philistines came toward him shouting. The Spirit of the Lord came powerfully upon him. The ropes on his arms became like charred flax, and the bindings dropped from his hands. Finding a fresh jawbone of a donkey, he grabbed it and struck down 1,000 men. Then Samson said, with a donkey's jawbone, I made donkeys out of them. With a donkey's jawbone, I have killed 1,000 men. When he finished speaking, he threw away the jawbone, and the place was called Ramoth Lehi. Because he was very thirsty, he cried out to the Lord, you have given your servant this great victory. Must I now die of thirst and fall into the hands of the uncircumcised? Then God opened up the shallow place in Lehi, and water came out of it. When Samson drank, his strength returned, and he revived. So the spring was called En Hakkor, and it is still there in Lehi. Samson led Israel for 20 years in the days of the Philistines. So with the Spirit of the Lord, that Samson grabbed the fresh jawbone of a donkey and struck down 1,000 men. But it talks about in verse 17, where it mentions about Ramoth Lehi, the place was named Jawbone Hill. And interesting name that I think about the hill that's over by my neighborhood. My dad calls it Pork Chop Hill. Don't think it's the same thing, but that was a very interesting name as far as it coming across as far as Jawbone Hill. But that was the name it ended up becoming. But you can see in verse 18 that him referring to being a servant of the Lord. And Samson looked at himself as that way, that he was a servant of the Lord. And it is interesting that he thinks of himself as a servant of the Lord. It's just sad that his life did not reflect being God's servant. That his life reflected being a servant of himself. And it is sad that that's the way he viewed himself, but that's the way it is. But I think it's really cool how God still took care of him. And it's awesome that God still took care of him, that when he was thirsty and needed water, he was losing strength, that God looked out for him and made sure that he had water. And En Hakkor means caller spring. He called out for water, and God gave it to him, and so caller spring ended up being the name of En Hakkor. And it would appear that the Philistines did not attempt, because as we look, Samson was a judge for 20 years. Now, as we look through the scriptures, there's some things that seem to be missing from other judges, where one, we see that the Philistines seem like they did not attempt to even mess with him for 20 years, except the near the end of it, which we're going to look at in a moment. But as we look at his judgeship, it seems still that Samson did everything single-handedly and did it alone. We don't see any examples of where he recruited an army for the Israelites. And there are very little details about his judgeship, about his courts, or about Israel's time during those 20 years. So I don't know whether 20 years were very oppressive or they were okay. We know the Philistines were still lurking around, so we know that it wasn't fabulous. But we don't know a whole lot of details about it. But we still see, even if we go flash 20 years later, you still see what Samson's operating alone. And that seems to be the way that he operates, is he operates by himself. I have the strength. I don't need an army. I can do things by myself. I'm good. I don't need you. I'm fine. And that seems to be the attitude of Samson, even if as we flash forward 20 years in advance. So now let's look at Judges 6, verse 4. It says, sometime later, he fell in love with a woman in the valley of Sorek, whose name was Delilah. The rulers of the Philistines went to her and said, see if you can lure him into showing you the secret of his great strength and how we can overpower him so that we may tie him up and subdue him. Each one of us will give you 1,100 shekels of silver. So Delilah went to Samson, tell me the secret of your great strength and how you can be tied up and subdued. Now, in verses 1 through 3, it shows where Samson ended up finding a prostitute and sleeping with a prostitute. And I exhale. Because you think that his experience with the Philistines and with the whole situation that happened, that there'd be a learning that would go on, that he would learn and would get away. But then you think about this, that was 20 years ago. So you think in 20 years, wiser, smarter, may have gained some convictions about God, may have gained some convictions about his life, and decide that if I'm going to do things, I'm going to do it God's way. But he goes back, and then he goes and he finds a prostitute and sleeps with a prostitute, unfortunately. Now he finds Delilah. And as we can see, the Valley of Sorek is right here, all around, right in his area. And so didn't travel far to where he ended up seeing Delilah. And it means grape valley. That's what the Valley of Sorek is. Now, Delilah, and I exhale again. Delilah means either flirtatious or devotee. And the latter suggests religious prostitution as a profession. So once again, it seems like this is a type of woman that Samson is going after once again. And he said he fell in love with her, fell in love with a religious prostitute. Not good at all. The fact that she was apparently of high social status and actually honored by the Philistines by their employment of her and their efforts to take Samson also supports the idea that she was a temple prostitute attached to the temple of Dagon. And we're going to learn a little bit more about the temple of Dagon. And it's going to tie some things all together. And it says about this, that this is the woman that Samson fell in love with. A woman of this type of lifestyle, of this type of character, this type of moral fiber, that this is who he falls in love with. He's like, I'm not going for even though it's against God's will and work with a Philistine, I want to find a good Philistine woman. I want to find one that's upstanding character that I can look at and think, wow, maybe she's different. Samson's like, no, I'm going way the opposite. That even if she is one of the Israelites, she's an Israelite they will say no to. That's the one he's going after. And God had it set up that for him to be a Nazirite, for him to be of upstanding character. Now, 1,100 pieces of silver, and I had to do a little more calculation. I had to go into my underwriter mode. I had to start doing some calculations. But when it finally was said and done, that 1,100 pieces of silver at today's time is just shy of $12,000 today. So, and let's even think about that. $12,000 to get Samson, that's a lot of money to go ahead and get him. But remember, each ruler would give her 1,100 pieces of silver. So each ruler was willing to give her about $12,000 today. I don't know how many of the rulers were there, but you calculate how many times the rulers were, that's what they were willing to give. They had a high bounty on Samson. And they said, you're the perfect one to get him. Because if we try to subdue him and try to do something, it's not going to work. But we know that you know how to get to him. Because we know what kind of character Samson has, you will be able to get to him. So we see in verses 7 through 16 that there were three times that Samson pretended to confide in Delilah without revealing the secret of his strength. The first one was tying him up with seven fresh thongs that have never been dried. That was the first thing he told her. Then the second one was to tie him securely with new ropes that have never been used. The third one was to weave the seven braids of his head into the fabric on a loom and tighten it with a pin. Now, I'm going to back up a second about the seven braids. Because in ancient Israel, the number seven has some symbolic significance. Seven was the perfect number, indicating completeness or even holiness. As a Nazirite set apart to God, the fact that Samson had seven braids may have spoke to his special holy calling. Once again, it is too bad that Samson did not live his life this way. Because we see how God looked and said, I want you to be special. I want my Israelites to be special, but I want you to be really special. And I call my Israelites to be holy, but I'm calling you to a special calling of being holy. and always reflect and think about what could have been. What could have been of Samson if he truly lived the life that God was calling him to? Even as his parents even went and asked an angel to come and to teach them how to take care of him and how to raise him, what would have been if he would have listened to his parents and would listen to what they were calling him to do and how they were calling him to live? So then we see in verse 15 where then she said to him, and he's talking about Delilah, "How can you say I love you when you won't confide in me? This is the third time you have made a fool of me and haven't told me the secret of your great strength." With such nagging, she prodded him day after day until he was sick to death of it. He got sick of her nagging him. But it didn't drive him away, though. He didn't leave. That was his signal. It's time to leave her. She's no good for you. But he still stayed around. So in verse 17, so he told her everything. "No razor has ever been used on my head," he said, "because I have been a Nazarite dedicated to God from my mother's womb. If my head were shaved, my strength would leave me and I'll become as weak as any other man." When Delilah saw that he had told her everything, she sent word to the rulers of the Philistines, "Come back once more. He has told me everything." So the rulers of the Philistines returned with the silver in their hands. After putting him to sleep on her lap, she called for someone to shave off the 7 braids of his hair and so began to subdue him. And his strength left him. Then she called, "Samson, the Philistines are upon you." He awoke from his sleep and thought, "I'll go out as before and shake myself free." But he did not know that the Lord had left him. Then the Philistines seized him, gouged his eyes, and took him down to Gaza. Binding him with bronze shackles, they sent him to grinding grain in a prison. But the hair on his head began to grow again after it had been shaved. Samson was obviously influenced more by his passion than by his will, by God's will. Blinded easily by his own desires, he could not readily discern God's desires. It's always been his issue. So, with a haircut, that throughout Samson's sinful decisions, that still God remained with him. The haircut was a renunciation of God's visible presence in his life and a violation of his Nazarite vows. But you know, as I start thinking about the Nazarite vows and what was committed, definitely we saw about the dead body, him being in contact with the dead body. We saw that. You have to imagine the kind of environment that Samson was around, that the violation of the grape products was violated. Because as much time he spent with the Philistines, you have to imagine that wine would have been involved in all the things that he was involved in. And the kind of the women that he was involved in, I'm sure wine was involved. And we could infer that. But then you think about the non-kosher food. He was around the Philistines, weren't having the kosher foods. Is that the last thing of him being a Nazarite was his hair. That was gone, and so therefore, that's it. No more Nazarite. It's done. And so therefore, his strength ended up going away. It's also interesting to me that Samson's eyes were removed. Remember, out of all the things they could have done to him, could have taken away his legs, could have broke his arms, could have done, especially because of his strength, break his arms. But instead, they ended up taking away his eyes. Samson was led by his eyes to take whatever he needed. Therefore, his eyes were removed from him. I totally believe that God was behind that. But then we can see, as in verse 22, that God's plan to deliver Israel from the Philistines had not been abandoned. That he began to gain strength again. But it also gave Samson hope that God will still take care of him. Because I'm sure he noticed that his hair was growing back. And I'm sure he felt his strength growing back too. So then, we're going to the end of the story. In verse 23, it says, "Now the rulers of the Philistines assembled to offer a great sacrifice to Dagon, their god, and to celebrate, saying, our God has delivered Samson, our enemy, into our hands. Now, I'm sure God heard that. And I'm sure God's going to definitely have something to do about that. It says, so when the people saw him, they praised their God, saying, our God delivered our enemy into our hands, the one who laid waste our land and multiplied our slain. While they were in high spirits, they shouted, bring out Samson to entertain us. So I'll go, oops, sorry, I went too far. And it said for him to bring him out so we could entertain us. And so so they called out Samson out of the prison, and he performed for them. When they stood him among the pillars, Samson said to the servant who held his hand, put me where I can feel the pillars that support the temple, so that I may lean against them. Now the temple was crowded with men and women. All the rulers of the Philistines were there, and on the roof were about 3,000 men and women watching Samson perform. Then Samson prayed to the Lord, Sovereign Lord, remember me. Please, God, strengthen me just once more, and let me with one blow get revenge on the Philistines for my two eyes. Then Samson reached toward the two central pillars on which the temple stood, bracing himself against them, his right hand on the one and his left hand on the other. Samson said, let me die with the Philistines. Then he pushed with all his might, and down came the temple on the rulers and all the people in it. Thus he killed many more when he died than while he lived. Then his brothers and his father's whole family went down to get him. They brought him back and buried him between Zorah and Eshtol in the tomb of Manoah, his father. He had led Israel 20 years. I want to go back to the beginning in verse 23. It talks about their god, Dagon. It was one of the two most worshipped Philistine gods. Dagon means grain in Hebrew, indicating that they may have been that he may have been regarded as the giver of crops. Now, remember when Samson took the foxes, he went to go burn their grain field and to destroy. I believe that God was also there, signaling the message to their god, Dagon. You have your god of the grains. I am destroying your grains. And I'm using Samson to do it. Out of all the things that Samson done, that he was prompted to go and to do that. To go and take foxes, which we heard is very difficult to do, and go and burn the grain fields. Going after it. That's God, and God signaling that. Then the Philistines then turn around, and they may have thought that Samson's capture was Dagon's revenge for the burning of the Philistines' field and vineyards. So they thought, yay, our God has now given us Samson, and that our God is the one that has the victory. That our God is the one that's going to overtake everything. And our God has been the one to do this. So at the time with this, I'm sure it was a huge gathering. And the thoughts is that there may have been at least 10,000 people who attended this occasion. Because we know there were 3,000 on a roof alone. So this is a gigantic and a huge gathering of all the Philistines to celebrate Samson's capture. And to go and worship their god, Dagon, who was one of the two most worshipped gods that they had. But you can see in verse 28 that Samson prayed to the Lord to strengthen him just once more. So I just need one more strengthening, God. And he ended up praying to him to give him the strength to be able to do it. And that God gave him the strength to kill more Philistines when he died than while he lived. That God's will prevailed. That God used Samson despite Samson's lifestyle and his sin. That God knew that I can get revenge on the Philistines. I will use it. But we see from the very beginning that God set out for Samson to be a very special person. He set him out for a very special purpose, for a very special life. That's not what he did. That's not what he did with his life. The thing about this is convicting is this. And I don't know why I want you to go and get your kids so fast. In Hebrews 11 and verse 32, it says, And what more shall I say? I do not have time to tell about Gideon, Barak, Samson, and Jephthah, about David and Samuel and the prophets, that Samson was still listed in with all the people of faith. Because in spite of the lifestyle and the way that Samson lived, that he did ended up having faith in God to do God's will, came to punishing the Philistines. And that God was going to make sure that he was the one that was going to be looked at as victorious, because I know that the other Philistines that weren't in that place, that weren't killed in that temple, they heard about what happened. They saw what happened. They saw what happened to their family members. And I know it made them think about their God that they were worshiping and wonder, you know what? Our God did not have the victory. It was the Israelites' God that had the victory. That's the God that ended up prevailing when it was all said and done. They heard that and they knew that. And I'm sure all the places around there, they heard about that too, that God is the one that ended up having the victory. But you know, it's something that's really encouraging that said towards the end of Hebrews 11. And in verse 39, it says, these were all commended for their faith, yet none of them received what had been promised. It says God had planned something better for us, so that only together with us would they be made perfect. See, God was able to use Samson despite all his sins and all his faults. God has something better for us. God has set us apart. God has decided that he wants a better life for us, that God has a specific life for us to live, a very special life, a very special existence, very special people in this world that God has set out for us. So my encouragement more than anything is for us to learn our lesson through Samson, that God has a special life for us, that God has special plans for us. So just like in 1 Timothy 4:16, really encourage us to watch our life and doctrine closely so that we can save ourselves and also save our hearers. That's the lesson, and that's what God wants us to learn more than anything through looking at Samson and seeing what happened with him. So with that, I really appreciate and thank you for the opportunity, especially going for 2 weeks and teaching a lesson about Samson. And so please get your kids and come back and have a great time of fellowship and worshiping God. Amen.